Aloha! Welcome back to Dolphinville Radio. This is your host, Dolphin Us, with you once again. Thanks for joining us.
And now, it's time.
Ya lia ya hite ti o ho ho e ka o ho ko ha hana ki no malui kalani malue ho e o ho mai ana ho kane I kona ka hu ho ano Aike
All right, we're here with Belinda Farrell joining us here in Dolphinville. We have the luxury of sitting right on the meridian 19.47 degrees coming right through this space overlooking the gateway to the gods, which is where you've been spending your last 2 weeks, and entertaining, shall we say, on some level, a group of people, and taking them through some magical steps towards what you like to teach most, which is Huna and chanting. So welcome, Belinda.
Well, thank you, Douglas. It's a real honor to be here, and just what you said, the gateway to the gods is exactly what we experienced with our flowing with the dolphins in the morning and then teaching people how to live in this flow and through letting go of their fears and their just stuck negative emotions within the body. It's just a real, it's such a pleasure to be in this type of environment because it brings them back to a place where they feel at home within themselves. And they can let go of things that normally they wouldn't let go of, maybe in the mainland.
Well, certainly a vacation resort and a romantic place like Hawaii is a stepping off place. And when we step into our heart of romance, oftentimes we can go into the heart of healing. But just let me back up a little bit and give our listeners a little background about who you are, and then we can sort of cover some of the ground of what you're doing now for the people. You were and are a master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming, which is NLP as it's called. You're also a master hypnotherapist, a past life regression therapist, as well as a Huna practitioner. And Huna is related to the ancient Hawaiian healing practices that incorporate sound energy. You've effectively combined these practices with your own special health and helping people to heal themselves through these practices and enhancing their performance from the on the outside of themselves. You finished two separate Huna, just now finishing these two separate Huna seminars on the Big Island of Hawaii, where you've taught four different levels of this Huna practicing. We're joined by a healing animal who is very, very sensitive. It's the magic dog. Magnum, the super dog. So if you hear little squeaks, it's the animal kingdom who are making their presence known
very
here.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that the Big Island of Hawaii has been a place that you've brought seminars for the last 7 years. And by combining the healing energies of these practices with the adventures of going into this magical bay, the gateway of the gods, and connecting with the wild spinner dolphins who come here on a regular basis, you've been able to activate this process in people to move out of their fear that we believe, and you confirm this with your practices, are held in places in the body.
Yeah.
So you've been doing this for the last 7 years, but you reside in San Rafael, California. You have two grown children. You love rollerblading, working out, and just being healthy. And you bring that kind of vibrancy to your work with people and help them to overcome some of the fears that they have, particularly fears of the water. And that's very close to your heart because, as we talked earlier, fear of the water is something that you've had to contend with all your life, even though you were a stunt car driver, amongst other things, some of your early life career.
It's amazing how I just felt when I finally finished a very long marriage that I had to move out of all of my fears. And slowly, slowly, I just began to evolve and just really be myself and speak my truth, just like your dog is speaking his
Magnum
truth.
Magnum is speaking his truth.
That's right.
Give me some of that attention and energy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just moving out of fear that I realized that my body had to finally find its truth. And I started firewalking with Tony Robbins. I figured, well, if I could walk across fire, then what else could I do in my life? And you're walking across 2,000 degrees of hot coals. And so it opens up this picture within you. It breaks the box, so to say. Breaks it open so that you start seeing possibilities in other dimensions.
Exactly.
And so I started to say, well, what now would I like to do? Mm-hmm. And what came up was that I wanted to be a race car driver.
Wow. After firewalking, you said you want to be a race car driver.
Yeah, and that came from nowhere, just from a gut. I mean, I loved racing bikes as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I loved wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, wheels, okay, that makes sense. But cars. I had never even known how to drive a stick shift. But when you start to break out of these fears, it's almost like if you say you can't, you must. And then if you must, you will. So I said, okay, this came from my gut. I have to answer this. So I picked up the phone, and I found out where there was a racetrack where I could enroll in a precision stunt driving course.
Wow.
And that was up in Sonoma. And I went as the only girl among a whole bunch of other professionals and men. And I said, teach me, I know nothing. And because I was such a sponge, I didn't have any ego to block me like some of the men, I think, did then. I did pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of that course, I got hired by the racetrack and by Buick to drive cars in New York. And that's how it started.
Wow.
Because I could hit my mark. I had a feeling. I knew how to go into peripheral vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just place the car wherever they wanted it on the first time.
Wow.
And that made money for me, too.
So, describe. You talked a little bit. Some of the stunts required you to, you know, drive into totally blank void space of fog or smoke, trusting on an intuitive level what the car and you were, as one, were doing.
I think when you start to explore inside the body and inside your mind, you start to see everything as already happening. So I would see the stunt already perfectly performed and the director very happy that it had been completed. And I'd see his happy face. It was in the can. And then I would just trust everything that would lead up to that.
Hmm.
And that was all part of, like, seeing out into the future, seeing, like, a perfect golf stroke, or seeing athletes do this as well.
Absolutely. And certainly yours is an athletic endeavor.
Exactly.
To drive a car, a high-performance vehicle, in such a way, a precision way. That's an athletic endeavor.
Because many of these things I hadn't done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just knowing that I could trust myself,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and perform it, and because I had the expertise. You can't let any doubt come inside. If you do, you're dead.
Well, we know that athletes and athletic prowess and athletic performance comes from, lo and behold, the right brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same center that generates the artistic endeavor. So athletes and artists have this thing in, you know, it's an intuitive-based reality that they can tap into to perform. So obviously you were already exercising. You'd made this incredible leap out of the rational world by walking over hot coals in order to convince yourself that what you believed was true and not what you were being told was true.
Exactly. And so just doing the driving, I did it for about 8 years.
Hmm.
And it was a wonderful career. It took me all over the world, and because you do car commercials and film in beautiful places.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you're being paid to have a vacation and then also perform.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
and would there be any, like, were you on television shows that we would recognize?
Oh, there was some Murder, She Wrote.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, I did something. I just finished a movie with Richard Gere.
Oh.
I did some stunt driving for him, and that's going to come out. It's called Bee Season.
So you're still actively engaged in stunt driving?
Only when it's convenient and when it's not too dangerous.
Okay.
Because I don't practice that much anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to go to the racetrack and keep your skills up. But I can do precision driving because I've been trained, you know, to do that.
Well, you've overcome many, many levels of fear. You had an adverse fear to water.
Right.
And yet now you go freely into the ocean and you lead others into the ocean.
You know, your greatest fear is usually something that will turn over and become your greatest love.
Mm.
And that's what I found, that the fear of the water was so intense in me that it just literally turned itself over and became like a mother... womb, like the bathtub, like going into a bathtub. And it's like breaking through that veil of what I perceived it was to become just the opposite. And that's what fear is. It's an illusion. Every fear is an illusion. And when you break through that illusion, you can find the love that's underneath it. And that's literally what happened out there. And of course, the dolphins have helped a lot, because when you want to go out there to be with them, there is no fear.
Well, you told me briefly the story of when you were down in the bay at a seminar, and you had to overcome your fear of the water, not swimming well, going out into a foreign place with no help, but you trusted that to get you out into the bay to be in the space where the dolphins are.
I trust my dreams a lot.
Okay.
My dreams are very prophetic, and
really? All
type of indigenous traditions trust the dream time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get powerful insights, precognitive things that warn you about future events. And I had a dream that I was going to be okay, but that I had to go out into the water and swim the length, maybe out to Captain Cook's.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed it when I woke up. I said, this is my time. I have to go do this.
Mm.
So it was like there's this message that comes to you in the dream time, and I believe it comes from the higher self talking to you, because the brain is quiet, the conscious mind is quiet, and it can really give you some symbolic messages.
Well, these are kind of the healing practices that we've seen coming out of the last 10 or 15 years of non-traditional, might call them alternative healing modalities, that is tapping into some of the ancient, more what we would call primitive or indigenous cultures, who had shown us that, you know, we kind of bypassed this real too quickly in our Western medicine practices. And now we're going back to recover some of these very important ways of understanding the nature of human consciousness that the primitives or the indigenous people, the Aboriginals, the Indians, and certainly the Native Hawaiians. The thing that intrigues me about Hawaii more than anything else is what I call the spirit of aloha.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's a practice, an understanding, a way of being that I've been led to believe goes back to far ancient times, the Lemurians.
Right.
And whether the Lemurians were of a physical nature as we are, or whether they were of a different dimensional nature, matters little, but I really believe that the belief and the aloha spirit is what still pervades it, and it is the most healing environment that one could have for breaking through these levels of fear.
Well, even the word alo means in the presence of, and ha is the divine breath.
Mm-hmm.
To Hawaiian, the ha breath is connection to the amakua.
Mm.
So when you aloha, it's me, I salute the divinity in you through the breath.
Mm.
That's the deeper meaning of aloha.
Mm-hmm. And to honor that within ourselves and others is the most loving, compassionate thing that you can share in the human experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's... go ahead.
So, huna, as an ancient practice, is actually a revival of the ancient traditions put in more contemporary terms. I first heard of Huna practice probably about 10 years ago, as taught by a man by the name of Serge King. But you learned it through other practitioners. How did you come into Huna as an extension of some of your healing modalities?
Well, like I was taking an advanced course in hypnosis and timeline and NLP, and I was introduced here on the Big Island to what was called Huna. It just means secret. These are the ancient secrets, and it was a phrase given by Max Freedom Long, who studied Huna for, I mean, he gave it that name because he studied the Hawaiians and tried to write down what wasn't written down. And so it was introduced to me, the Ho'oponopono, which is this act of forgiveness, which is so vital to clearing things up on the inside. And it made sense to me that we were going on the inside and flushing things out rather than just blah, blah therapy. And so the more I started to practice it and do it to myself, I started feeling the difference. And for me, it's always, show me the proof. Show me the solution. I want to feel this. I just don't want to think it. I want to know that it's working. And it worked. It was clearing things. It was calming me. And then the chants came in as a result of Uncle George, Naope, and Etua Lopez, the Hawaiian teachers that came in to teach us that. And the chants just started grabbing me. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had to learn how to chant. Mm-hmm. And Etua became my teacher and taught me the ipuheke and the drumming. And it just became something like cellular memory awakening. Mm. And I just totally went into this state of euphoria with my higher self and cutting cords. I was told that the Hawaiians, the ancient Hawaiians who practiced this cord cutting, live the longest of any race on the planet because they clear the emotional body and the body then can heal itself quicker and they live longer.
Hmm. So this really was a life extension kind of thing.
Exactly.
To get us to a place of balance where healing can take place, and then what's the result? Well, we're able to share that energy, that vital force with others around us. Did you find that, I think it's the sound of chanting, and we've heard a lot of the power of sound, that it can actually, you know, enhance the life force so greatly. Yeah. And when it's brought up from the inside, of course, it has the immediate effect on vibrating the body.
Right.
We know from the dolphins that the sound environment is so vitally important to their world. They're sonic creatures.
Right.
And so much of the teachings or learnings, if you want to call them that, that I've received and others have received, has simply been putting us in a position of floating in the water.
Right.
And being invited by the dolphins to share in the sonic space.
Oh, that's so true, Douglas. I mean, it's just like you're in this harmony. It's almost as though they come to us seeing that we're just so active-brained, you know, so beta-waved.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at us like a piece of sheet music. And they want to put us back in harmony
mm-hmm.
with that sheet music because it's all discord from
mm-hmm.
all
mm-hmm.
of these other things coming in. And so the sonar and all of that just mirrors their theta. They have these theta waves,
mm-hmm.
these alpha waves that are more of a meditative state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go into that same place with them and
mm-hmm.
become mirrors to that. And
mm-hmm.
so we see our divinity perhaps for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Or we feel,
feel
a sense of balance.
Yes.
That is profound in and of itself. I know so often people who are exiting the water, they don't really know a way of expressing
right.
what it is that they're feeling, but you see this big smile on their face and this kind of glazed over look in
right.
their eyes. And I said, well, you just got stoned by the dolphins.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You're in that dolphin space. It's
yes,
really
yes.
quite amazing. But chanting itself, a practice of even chanting through the snorkel as an extension of breath, when we go out and the snorkels are next to our ear, and I found a number of years ago that if I just put out a simple tone, it vibrates my head, and I was asking for a tone to come up from within me, not a specific note,
mm-hmm.
but as my means of putting out a signature whistle, if you will, or a signature vibrational frequency that I identify with me. I wanted it to be mine so the
okay.
dolphins would be able to recognize me. Now, after years of doing this, I go out and I'll just start toning the minute I get in the water and going out towards the dolphins. Meanwhile, I'm closing my eyes and visualizing dolphins swimming towards me because
right.
I'm projecting this holographic image out through the tone of intention. And believe me, it works quite frequently. I'll
yeah.
open my eyes and no longer am I surprised and flabbergasted to find there's a bunch of dolphins coming
right.
towards me.
We found when we were out there too, I said, you know, we weren't seeing any dolphins. We would just start laughing.
Yes.
And the laughter just would become infectious and then all of a sudden there they would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so full of fun and joy,
mm-hmm.
they're attracted to joy. And I try to prepare these people before they come. to clear themselves so they can become more joyful. I have them read a book called Listening to Wild Dolphins.
Mm.
And it helps them to
Bobby Sandoz.
Bobby Sandoz.
Yes.
One of very, very fine book. And
yeah.
gets them to realize that it's their responsibility to become attractive so that the dolphins would want to be attracted to them to come swim with us. Because
mm-hmm.
we really don't swim with them.
Mm-hmm.
They come to be with us.
Exactly.
They're attracted to our energy.
We put ourselves in a position. We try to neutralize our own internal dialogues.
Right.
So we get rid of the chattering. That's a natural function. And it helps because we have this thing in our mouth already.
Exactly.
You know, and whenever you go into meditation, they always say, find your breath. Well, there it is, right in the tube next to your head.
Right.
Your head is in silence of the water. You're in a zero gravity situation. So you're out of your element. And so you have to, if you give yourself into it with relaxation, which is one of the things I like to help people do, then suddenly you're in a naturally altered state of consciousness
right.
without having to do anything except float there in the space.
And you're such a master at helping people in the water. You were just divinely professional with the beginners that I had. And I had several very serious beginners in both of the weeks. To make them feel safe and to give them that opportunity to grow and to find their bravery and their courage in the water.
Our jobs are fairly similar, creating a bubble of safety for people to step in and overcome the fears. And just, you know, I know it's part of your work and some of the things that you have garnered over a lifetime of study and now a practitioner, but this idea of being able to forgive ourselves, the very
mm-hmm.
basic essence of the teaching, comes up time and time again in so many different ways. The dolphins are more or less a symbol of what it feels like once you get in that space.
Right.
But how do you help people overcome these blocks? What's some of the techniques that you use?
Well, again, this is a technique called to go in and make amends with yourself, to really see the people that have been corded to you, because your thoughts will be like an electric current. It's really you that have the perception that they did something to you, that they angered you, that they abused you, they took your power away, they stole from you. It's all your perception. And so when you put people down below you, it's like putting them on a stage. You gather all these people and you see where you've invested your money, because your energy is just like money.
Hmm.
And if you have no energy in your body, you have nothing to heal yourself with when it comes time for you to need that to literally heal yourself. You spend all your money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's usually spent on the past.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And how you're holding on to the resentment and the guilt and the fear and the sorrow and all
mm-hmm,
of that
mm-hmm.
drains all your electromagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way of making it right. Putting them down on the stage, seeing how you have connected to them vibrationally with these cords. They're like sticky cords. In fact, you could look like a mummy, all dressed up, because you have yourself down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you offer the breath down from your higher self down to these people on the stage, because you're changing this darkness into light.
Mm.
So it's as though the higher self is already forgiven you, and you're just forgiving yourself for holding on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you make amends with that. You just, you know, it's like I forgive you, and you send the breath down, and then you take a cutting instrument and you spin it around you counterclockwise, and you actually see these people float away.
Mm.
And then you tuck the leftover cords back inside yourself. I have this on a CD where I take people through this
mm-hmm.
with chants and symbols to make get right inside, and entities can leave the body, and
mm-hmm.
things that have globbed on from the past,
mm-hmm.
and it literally lightens you up.
Mm.
And then it's something that you have to repeat, because you don't just go to the dentist and get your teeth cleaned, do you?
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep washing your teeth.
All right.
So this is the internal cleansing on the inside,
mm-hmm.
which we were taught not to do.
Isn't that curious?
Yeah.
I mean, some of the practices now that are actually liberating us from these debilitating kinds of thought patterns, energy patterns that have been encouraged and entrained in our culture. And it's always been something I keep coming back to, and I see people who are hung up because of an educational system that programmed them in a certain way, or a social system in their jobs, or a hierarchy of being that made them feel insufficient, or commercials on television or radio ads that make them feel insufficient with who they really are. So part of the work that you do is unraveling and unmummifying some of these very limiting belief systems.
It's empowering people, and this is where we are moving towards, is to a form of empowerment.
Absolutely.
Because the past has been taking power away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get control of a group, is you put the whole group in fear. You make them feel guilty. You make them feel powerless. And you make them angry so they can follow you into war, or they can follow you and do anything that, that you're led to do. Institutions, governments, religions, all of these things did such, you know,
mm-hmm.
such stuff. And now we're finding that we have to speak our truth, that that's the only way we're going to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get your power back, you're going to make different choices in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You may not work for the same business that was telling you what to do. You'll start your own business.
Mm-hmm.
You won't allow relationships to drain you.
Mm-hmm.
You'll marry yourself. Mm-hmm. You'll become whole within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole new life force that's
mm-hmm.
coming in, a new DNA structure, a new mutation.
Well, and you're very much a part of activating these new codes of behavior, new patterns of belief that empower people. It's interesting that I've noticed, anyway, over the last 10 or 15 years of my own, what I would loosely call spiritual awakening, is that I've come to a new understanding of what has been, say, mislabeled sometimes, but often identified as the divine feminine force.
Mm-hmm.
So much has been talked about and maybe over-talked about in this arena, but in my observation, I've seen more and more of the divine feminine being able to participate as part of the cultural matrix. Whereas before a certain line, and if we had to look at a date, let's say 2000, the year 2000, it seems as if the divine feminine was relegated to the role of the Holy Ghost. It was always there around, hovering above,
there, right.
But never really allowed to play in the game. That was
exactly.
Part of the divine trinity in the Christian tradition of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The Father and the Son were down there playing the game on the field, and the Holy Ghost was up there. Something happened. There was a shift. And now this divine feminine force is plugged firmly into the firmament. And it is a player on the field and is contributing very wonderfully to the overall healing of the Father and the Son in that scenario.
Well, and that's exactly, in Huna, there's a higher self and the middle self and then the lower self.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are learning how to activate this lower self, which is like a little puppy dog,
mm-hmm.
and it's the seat of all your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your intuition. And it brings in cognitive forces, and when you trust that intuition, you can see out into the future. You'll trust your gut more than anything, rather than the mind. And this was what was eliminated and deleted, is that our psychic powers were poo-pawed until now. So
mm-hmm.
the more, I'm finding that the more you let go of the past, the more that you release the past, the more intuitive you become. The more psychic you become, the more activated in the third eye you become, because
mm-hmm.
there's nothing, the veils have released themselves and you become a clear channel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's exciting.
And I think the clear channel and the intuitive awareness are the so-called realms of the divine feminine. And we're seeing now that this new force and energy, this new awareness and understanding, the new re-empowerment, not only within women, but within men as part of their own being, that is bringing part this tremendous change that's going on.
And see, you embody that for women. You make them feel safe, Douglas. And so you have brought in the divine feminine within you, which men have to do in order to be balanced.
I agree. And the women then have to re-identify through their own power structure their relationship with their own divine masculine.
Exactly.
And I think somebody pointed out that the divine feminine in men is not the same as the divine feminine in women.
Right.
There is a distinctly different thing. Being in a male body, expressing feminine energy, and it doesn't necessarily have to come out in the classic, okay, I'm wearing dresses now, and high heels, or painting my face, in order to personify women. No, it's an understanding of the intuitive brain, or what I call the heart-mind versus the head-brain.
Right, it is. It's like an essence. It's like you possess an essence of the feminine, and you have a presence of the masculine. You have that focus, that direct, you know, way of
and even though Magnum is making this point as the masculine dog.
He's agreeing.
But it's funny, Magnum, who, you know, often they say the owners and the pets are very much alike. When people greet and meet my dog, who's a black Labrador retriever, and he's getting up in years now, but he has such a soft presence, mm-hmm. and he's a healing animal, that people will automatically assume that he's a female.
Oh,
isn't she sweet? Or anything. Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if Magnum would be really happy to hear about his being mistaken for a female, but he has a presence about him, and maybe that's what you're recognizing in me, an allowance for that divine presence of the feminine energy to be equally here.
Yeah.
That to me has been very important, and something that the dolphins have been very keen on and cluing me in on. Because my earliest experience with dolphins seemed to really open up that channel of energy for me.
Mm.
So we're coming up on about a 30-minute mark now. I want to give the listeners a chance to take a little breather and sort of drink in what we've been talking about. And perhaps you will adorn us with a chant so that we can sort of use that sonic energy to go into a space. And this will be, maybe I'll ask you to do this a couple times, but whatever's coming up now, I'd love you to share that chant energy.
I'd love to. This is a chant that asks for the light to come in and to move out the darkness and to bring you into a state of centered calmness. Ahana kino malui kalani malue ho e ho lu mahiana ho kanehi kona kahu o ano
And now, it's time.
Ainohana kekui kana hele hele Iali aia he te tio huahue ka ua koko Ahana kino malui kalani malue ho Ano ho kane I kona kahu ho ano aike.
Thank you, Belinda, for sharing what is a very, very powerful chant. And we've talked in the break here, we were talking about some of the instances and how powerful this particular chant is. You mentioned Pila of Hawaii as a man who has brought a lot of the mysteries of the Big Island to print and has even capitalized on the idea of this book. You met him, and he mentions this chant in his book. How does he frame it in his book?
Well, we have chanted together, and he especially thinks this is the most powerful chant, ancient chant, that you can use. And he mentioned it as what happened to a woman when she went into a bank. And there was a bank robbery that started to take place, and the first thing she did was started to vibrate this chant underneath her breath, mm-hmm. because she was connected to the protection of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as she did that, within a span of around 5 minutes, this bank robber had put his gun down and given himself up.
Surrendered.
And just surrendered. It does that. Now, I've taught this chant and the symbols, these ancient symbols, to police officers. Mm-hmm. I've had them on my trips. And they weren't even interested in Mahuna when they first had heard of it. They just wanted to swim with the dolphins. And they went back home and started using this, and they stopped a riot with this chant.
Wow.
And they wrote to me and said that they're using it now in their police work. There's one particular symbol that is taught in level one, and they couldn't get a prisoner to quiet down. Mm-hmm. He was across the room, and they did the symbol on him, and he went to sleep.
Hmm.
Completely.
Now, when you say symbol, and I've noticed that you work with your hands in the air, so to speak,
right,
to create a symbol. Is it sort of like one people might understand Reiki uses symbols as a means of manipulating energy? Is it like
yes.
that?
It's more specific than Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book that was found from the 1800s that has a group of 36 symbols.
Mm.
And it's a language that comes, they call it Ho'omanaloa, which is making energy from a long distance away. And these come from the clouds, from behind the clouds, from divination.
Okay.
And when they're meditated on in certain chakras, they can create openings. They create all kinds of light and healing of different chakras of the body. They're very specific. They can speed things up.
Mm.
They can open you up to your inner secrets. Some of that one particular one that quieted the prisoner, it forms almost like a stun gun on the people who are having depression or confusion, and it literally stops them in their tracks. You can do it to an animal who is about to sting you, and it stops right in midair. We do that in the house. I teach people how to do that with the cockroaches so they won't kill them. You'll actually do the symbol over them. They stop, turn around, and go out the other way.
Wow. Well, I've had some conversations with some of the bugs around here. You do have to kind of come to terms. We are in a jungle. There are a lot more of them than us. So yeah, it's time to start to be simpatico with your environment. And there's a lot of people who carry a lot of phobias with eight-legged animals and cockroaches. It's amazing.
It does. But once you learn some of the symbols, it can protect you and really help you to overcome certain fears without having to use any of the outside forces like guns or sprays and things like that.
Well, the fact that you don't even have to say it out loud is indicative that a chant, when intended under your breath, still has the same power. It transcends the actual time-space matrix, and the intention then becomes the thing that's forming the reality around you, which is, again, going back to some of the so-called New Age teachings. You are, you're the one who is creating the reality around you. What you put out echoes back to you.
Exactly.
These are some of the principles that I believe are related to the most ancient awarenesses,
right,
time before time, and you're choosing a method now. With the CDs that you've put out, how do you demonstrate the symbols and the chants together on a CD?
Well, in the chant in forgiveness, I do the chanting and I explain the chants of how we need to go to this forgiveness with ourselves. And then when you go through the actual forgiveness process, while people are putting their family and exes on the stage, I'm doing a symbol that will help them to calm the wrongs that have been between them. And it's like a vibration. It goes through from the CD. That vibration goes out to the person themselves, and they can feel the effects of the symbol. Because I do these sessions to people all over the world, and I'm doing symbols over the phone.
Yeah.
I'm doing chanting over the phone. And again, it's a vibration. It comes through even thousands of miles away.
Mm. So again, you're condensing time and space. Quantum physics theory is that there is no, the illusion of time and space is something that is relegated to one way of thinking. And that we're busting out of these ways all over. There's a movie that's been going around, What the Bleep Do We Know? It's an assembly of scientists and philosophers that are demonstrating that we're on the cutting edge of a new way of understanding. And we're in the midst of this huge global transition, global transformation into maybe in the nick of time to really step into our power. And it starts from the individual, doesn't it?
And it's not even new. It's old. It's going back to what the ancient... This is Huna.
Right.
What the belief is about is taking responsibility for everything that happens to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the first assumption of Huna magic, is that we have to be a choice rather than effect of everything that happens to us. Then we can uncreate it. And when you do, I was just going to give an example of the cord cutting. When I first did this, my daughter was about 17 years of age, and I was in Hawaii, and I was learning how to cut cords. And she calls me on the phone and starts ranting at me about, what are you, you're always gone, and this is stupid, and blah, blah, blah. And it was so negative. And I was in my bliss learning all this great stuff. And I just put the phone down. I put her down on the stage immediately, or down in front of me, sent her down light, did this process, forgave her, forgave myself for holding on to this negativity, cut the cords with these huge scissors, spun it around, saw her float away, and then I went, oh my God, there she is. My daughter's floating away. And I thought, what did I do? Well, within minutes, the phone rang again. She called me and she said, Mom, I'm so sorry I said that to you. I want you to know I really think what you're doing is great and I support you. I love you.
Wow.
And I knew that from that moment on I was going to do this process.
Mm.
Because it flipped the whole situation over completely. And they were 5,000 miles away. So this is the power of this. Doing this is felt wherever. When you have things coming up from ancient times that hasn't been resolved, it's an absolute relationship resolution process within yourself. And it's based on quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't be in relationship to anything unless you have another party there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of being in relationship to something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have a relationship to money that can be very disempowering. You can put money on the stage. You can put the IRS down the stage. You can put political parties down on the stage and terrorists down on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's just an endless, it's endless of what can take away your power.
Well, certainly contemporary media is designed to capture our attention and literally suck out energy into the television, mostly, because that's the big eye there. It's that has been used to manipulate the way that we think about ourselves. The interesting thing about your work and some of the things that I see people who are moving into these new modalities is that we recognize the importance of the individual, because this change can only take place from the inside out.
Absolutely.
There's not an overall formula that people can study and say, well, if we go 1, 2, 3, it's all going to be magically erased. But in a manner of speaking, these are simple steps that everybody can perform.
If they want to do it, and everything is free will, and you have, there is a plateau of readiness, because the call gets sent to us. And you have to answer the call. And not everybody is on that journey. Not everyone is that ready to do that. Everybody's got their own purpose for being here. And you are only here to move into the direction that you have come here to move towards.
Hmm.
Not everybody is going to answer the call. And so the free will is vital. You can't change people from one to another. They have to be willing to change.
Well, how do you see this change affecting the global consciousness? Do you see it as a trend that is necessary to develop? You talked about the ancient world, the knowledge from the ancient world coming back around. I see it as a reclosure of the old circle.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people who are not going to be making these changes so that we can move are going to be leaving the planet.
In what way? Dying?
Dying. I think third world countries will be, some of them, eliminated, and what is going to come back in its place is a much more honored structure, much more respectful, communities for living. And we're really rebuilding another world.
Hmm.
And people who don't make the changes, there was a Hopi prophecy years ago that had etched in a very large stone two paths. And the two paths were completely, very visually marked with going in one direction. There were figures with heads and bodies that weren't attached to the head. They had hats on the head. There was no attachment to the body. And if you followed that path, it was going to lead you into greed and destruction. And the other path was a very abundant community, people working together, trees, flowers, fruit, vegetables, all these planting, just community effort, wisdom, abundance. And if you followed that path, that's where you would go. Now, we've been going back and forth, and we now have to make a choice of which path we're going to go. Right in the center of this etching was 2012. So it was as though if we...
As what? Wait a minute.
As the end
not
of the Mayan...
Not the word 2000. I know, the Mayan
the
calendar.
The letter, the Mayan calendar. Mm-hmm. And so based on whether or not we make the choice this way or this way is going to lead us either past 2012 or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of charge around that particular date.
Right.
And people who are into remote viewing, for example, will say that the remote viewers don't see anything going on past that. And while others will say that, you know, it symbolizes the end of a process of thinking where linear time has a hold on us, and no longer
right.
linear time will have no hold. So you really can't plot out
exactly.
a linear course.
Exactly. We're not going to be as etched into our watches.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be thinking more intuitively, more psychically, like the ancient Aborigines.
Mm-hmm.
I was trained as a technical remote viewer,
mm-hmm.
and I stopped doing that because there was so much going into the minds of the terrorists after 9/11 to find out what the next, you know, terrorist attack was going to be. And you go into these minds, and sometimes it's very hard to come out. And I never wanted to do that. I didn't want to gamble with that.
Curiously, that's the subject of a movie that's out right now called Suspect Zero with Ben Kingsley. I've not seen it. It's not showing right here. But the premise is that he's trained as a remote viewer. He gets in the head of a serial killer,
and he
can't get out.
It's very dangerous.
I think so. And which brings me to a kind of an interesting point. A lot of the ancient practices, if you step into trying to do something, and I use, let's say, Merkaba meditation as an example, that in 1200 AD was discontinued by the rabbis who were practicing it because they were finding it was causing insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a practice that that has been revived in the last 20 years or so and has been used as a way of stepping into higher frequency consciousness. One wonders if everybody is ready to do that, and if they try to step in too quickly or with the wrong power tools, perhaps they're asking for some bad circumstances.
You're asking, when you're asking for, because I had a gentleman that went to a certain country and he thought he was going to acquire more power, and he had even written a book on higher self. He was a medical doctor. You'd think he was very evolved. And he allowed this healer to come and suck energy from his body, and he almost died.
Mm.
And it was very serious because, again, your power comes from within you. And when you tune into that, there isn't anything outside you. No one can give you that power.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that you accumulate by building up your life force and your mana. And that's the Holy Grail. That's
mm-hmm.
the whole key of this masculine and feminine, is building up this life force within you so that you become so light in your body
mm-hmm.
that you don't feel heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be sick.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, if I may bring up this study from UCLA that was done in the mid-90s. Greg Braden wrote about it in his book, Science of Compassion. But they studied these children that were being born with AIDS. And by the time they were in kindergarten, the AIDS virus had disappeared. Now, they gave it the name spontaneous genetic mutation because it literally just was obliterated from their body. And they looked at what these children were thinking. How were they running their life? What was it that created this disease to just completely vanish? And they found that they had stepped out of polarity, that they had completely stopped judging the world, that this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad. And they were vibrating from such a high frequency of their heart in seeing the unified feel and the connection to everything that they were literally wiping out the disease. And when they put other disease cells in petri dishes and tried to infect these other cells, they couldn't get sick with
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was as though they became immune to disease by raising the frequency of their vibrations, of more heart, you know, and no judgmental stuff. And that's literally, they even found that the codons that they had, they counted codons. We have 20 of these combinations of codons that make up our DNA, 64 pairs. Normal human being has 20. These children had 24. And then they started studying other people and found that 1% of the entire population is in this same category.
Hmm.
So it's not just the children, it's become adult, and it's a new mutation, so that eventually we'll see the end of disease.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been brought up in some of the conversations with regarding DNA coding.
Right.
The scientists have identified these codons that function, and they've identified the functions up to 20, 22 chromosome pairs.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's all these others that are hanging out there that the science says, well, these are just junk chromosomes that don't do anything.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of ironic that science has a tendency to dump things that they don't understand as being totally inconsequential, and, you know, reduce it to a non-entity status.
Exactly.
When in fact, I believe that on some level of mutation, these ancient codes are being reconnected so that we can come back to a state of being which once existed, perhaps before the fall in the biblical literature, before the rise of the most ancient civilization that we have a record of. There were ancient civilizations such as Lemuria or Atlantis, as we have the legendary names now to hold up, that supported a culture or a highly evolved form of human species. We were using more than 7% of our cognitive awareness. We were actually engaging in practices where we could manifest physical reality as a matter of willpower by being able to assemble molecular structure with our minds and the assistance of an energy power grid system that was in place, the remnants that we see possibly as the pyramidal structures.
Yeah, we're part of the grid. Well, when Einstein's brain was measured, his cerebral cortex was 3 times larger than a human brain.
Mm-hmm.
So he was using it.
Exactly.
He was stepping into the void and mm-hmm. going out into the darkness, and he was also very attuned to his higher self.
Right.
And would get inspiration and come back mm-hmm. and know that there was always a solution. Really a great role model.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of his wisdom has started to infiltrate into our normal culture now, whereas he was put up on a pedestal as being such a great genius that nobody could understand. But to me, the way a genius can be defined is that they are able to take complex ideas and render them palpable and understandable to the most simple mind. And that's what a real genius is.
That's right. And it's really, the whole is better than the sum of its parts. So
absolutely.
The most simple truths are very simple. That's why when I look at the dolphins and I see them coming up for the breath, I'm always reminded, all we have to do is take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the deep breath through the nose up to the top of the head. And mm-hmm. if you see a lot of people that are sick, they're not breathing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're breathing shallow mm-hmm. through their chest, cutting off all the life force to the third eye and to the top of the head.
Mm.
And do you know where the word howley comes from?
I believe it means shallow breath, doesn't it?
Well, it means without breath.
Without breath.
Because when the Hawaiians were noticing the missionaries as they came over mm-hmm. here, they were offering these prayers, but they weren't breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just say to one another, that's not strong.
Mm-hmm.
They're not talking to God. Mm-hmm. They have not built up any life force, no gift up to the
mm-hmm.
higher self.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became howley, ha breath, only without.
Without breath.
So you are, that's mm-hmm. and it's stuck because the white people don't breathe. So the dolphins have to breathe to live. And if we don't take that breath up to the top of our head, we will die a spiritual death.
Yes.
So they're the reminders of this breath.
Exactly. We call it conscious breathing.
We understand
that the dolphins are conscious breathers, whereas the humans are non-conscious or unconscious breathers.
Right.
And I hasten to point out to people that we do get into these unconscious states. Even when we're awake, we're not fully conscious.
Right.
There must be something that's been reprogrammed, I feel, on some level, that has caused the situation to exist now. And it may be an ancient control mechanism or a control biology that was integrated into the actual genetic codings so that vast greater numbers of humans could be controlled. There's plenty of philosophies and evidence that support that. Plus, the fact that the nostril is the actual blowhole that's moved up over the dolphin and cetacean head to rest at the most important point, which is where the spinal column meets the brain.
Yeah.
And at that level is where the dolphin air comes in and activates their entire energy system, which is why they're kind of cool.
Oh, and when you breathe, and on my CD, the Enchantment CD, there is a higher self connection that's built into that, and it'll start with 4-ha breaths, and it'll go for like 10 minutes of chanting and this breathing of 4-ha breaths and asking the higher self to come down. Mm-hmm. Once you've cut the cord, then your body is ready and open to receive the higher self connection, which is like fine rain. They call the Hawaiian called the ka'au helemoa, the rain that comes down, kisses your face, and then it just disappears, tingles as it comes in.
Yeah, I know. I got tingly skin when you said that.
Yeah.
Well, you have a wonderful capacity for expression. And certainly when you step into your power and you ring out a chant, it's as if you are channeling in all of the gods and all of the princesses and all of the great, great teachers and traditional huna practitioners. I don't know if it's related to what a kahuna is. Kahuna seems to be related in word.
Well, it's a high, a kahuna is a master teacher.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a kahuna of surfing. There can be a kahuna of woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
But the ka is of the light. And the huna was, again, a high altered state of bringing light in. This person was a very intense healer of the highest degree.
And but it has to do with secrets, too. So secrets of the light.
Right. Well, they're no longer secrets. We're here to uncover. I was introduced this 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1979, this Religious Freedom Act came and finally opened up so that we could do some chanting of these ancient chants and bring some of these ancient secrets that, again, were punishable by law.
Yeah.
From the missionaries and even people before the missionaries. There was a kahuna by the name of Hiwa Hiwa. And he had a dream or a prophecy that these white people were coming over and had the same kinds of powers that Jesus possessed, because they were aware of these miracles that Jesus possessed. So he thought that these white people would have the same powers as Jesus. And he had some of these kahunas killed before the missionaries arrived, so he could set himself up and set them up so that they would already have, you know, some type of power here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting because he got the wrong picture. When they did come and they started sending the sick people over to them, they couldn't cure a mosquito. And he realized he had done some disservice.
Mm-hmm.
But it
because
was too
the
late.
Ones that he had eliminated were, in fact, genuine healers.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And so he had brought them over here. They had kind of set themselves into power. And they kind of took over after that.
Well, light is interesting as a metaphor for what we're activating with some of these coatings.
Right.
And it's occurred to me, maybe through the influence of the dolphins, that, you know, there's two realms of light that we recognize. The light spectrum that is the rainbow colors.
Right.
But also sound is a denser vibrational frequency that is also of the light.
Right.
And because it's denser and more containable, I believe that the dolphins have mastered that realm of the light spectrum that we know as sound. And that's where the chant seems to tie into this. We can get to the light through a denser, more compact understanding of the sound vibrations.
Right.
And as humans, we have been distracted with the literal speed of trying to track down 180,000 miles per second, when the dolphins are trying to point out, maybe if we just focus our attention on a more containable sound holosphere or holosonic sphere, it might be a little bit more attainable.
And you said a key word, distraction.
Mm-hmm.
We are so distracted. And when we're distracted with the conscious mind and the ego wants you to just focus on the body.
Mm.
And so the mainland has a lot of distractions for the body. You have to get this, you have to do that. And as long as you're distracted and following the guise of the ego, you won't choose the breath. You won't choose to cut cords. You won't choose to do any of these practices. So it becomes really a choice that you have to make. And a lot of the distractions too are alcohol. People want to drown their emotions, in drugs and all kinds of things. That's going to drown and shove things down as well. So it's opening up and deciding to bring your spirit back. Mm. So literally use your will to come back and to clear this while you're still in the physical body. Mm. Or else you might have to come back and do it again. And again.
Well, we're coming up towards the top of the hour. Maybe you can share another chant as we let this sort of go. And we'll come back, and I want to talk about more some of the personal healing that you do with people, some of the practices and the sacred journeys, of course. I'm really interested to learn more about that and have you share that with our listeners, okay? So if you would, anything that you feel that you want to use as a... go ahead and...
Ay, que de lina maine, que kini olalo. Ay, que de lina maine, que kini olalo. Na hoa hoka uka, na hele opuna. Akai ka noho, hoka ui ka kahi no. Hoka ne, ika papa ilohia. Alau ka lohe lani, api ilani lae, alae, alahea. Ua maha hona, hoka ne, ika awa. Ua kahu kekeha, ika oluna. Ua hihi holani, ika moena. Kipa ihi ae, ke kapa akanoe. A hokopo akai, a kibila hola. He ala, he ala, he a. Ahie, hie, 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 hie. He no ano, kane. Kahale kayo kamakaleva. Ay, ay, ay. No luna he kahale kayo kamakaleva. Nana kamaka e moani nui telehuala. Ho, ho, iki kayo, mali kumai. Iku aela kale hua ila ila la hea la hea la hea. Ila lo hoi. Ila lo hoi. Kahale kai o kamaka lava, nana kamaka e mo ani nui kele huala. Ho ho iki kai o mali umai, iku a e kahale hua ila ila la hea la hea la hea. Ila lo hoi, ila lo hoi. Ho ko e kale hua kie kie ia la maka. Kale hua I ke kanakala, lilo ahi lelo I hea la, hea la, hea la, hea. Ila lo hoi, ila lo hoi. Ho ko e kale hua kie kie ia la, maka u kale hua I ke kanakala, lelo ahi lelo I hea la, hea la, hea la, hea. Ila lo hoi. Ila lo hoi. kai e ho olo no ike kai la o puna la hea o puna I ka ulu hala la hea la hea la hea kako o puna kako o puna o ke alu ili ili ne e ike kai e ho olo no ike kai la o puna la hea o puna I ka ulu hala la hea la Kaiko o puna, kaiko o puna. Ah, yeah, 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 yeah. Hei noa no, hi iaka I ka poli, a o pele.
We're back talking with Belinda Farrell. And I really appreciate everyone staying with us because she has some beautiful information to share that comes from the most ancient source, and yet it is as new as the next moment being born as we speak. So thank you for sharing this with us, Belinda. For those of you who are just tuning in, we're talking with Belinda Farrell, who is a master Huna teacher and has been here for the last couple of weeks sharing her wisdom and her teaching methods with a class or a seminar. And she does these yearly, comes over here for a couple of weeks, 2 one-week sessions that allows people from all over the world to come and experience the magic of this place. Where we are on the Gulf Coast, on the Kona Coast of the Big Island of Hawaii, overlooking Kealakekua Bay. Belinda has been a master practitioner of NLP, neuro-linguistic program. She's also a master hypnotherapist, a past life regression therapist, and has been known now as a Huna practitioner and the ancient healing practice of chanting, getting us in touch. And when she did that chant right before the break, I noticed in looking at her, it was like there were entities or ancient Huna practitioners and teachers that go back, to me, they went back tens of thousands of years. And you reminded me that when you do a chant from the base, that you're able to actually summon everybody who's ever done and practiced that. And how does that work? And how does it feel to have all those people in company with you?
Well, it makes you feel that you're not just doing this alone, that you are supported by the lineage, and that the lineage comes back and chants with you, and they support you in moving that energy through you. So it's not just your voice, but it's the tens of thousands of other voices that support that same lineage, that go back all the way to divination, up to the highest noho. In that first chant, it was called I Noho Ana. Noho is the light, the supreme light that comes in and gets rid of the noah. The noah is the dark stuff. Mm. And so I used to have a very meek voice, Douglas. I had this, this high little baby kind of voice, and you wouldn't know it now because I can, summon from a deeper place within me. And it was revealing my truth. It was speaking my truth. It wasn't trying to say, oh, gosh, I better not say that because I'm going to hurt that person or they're going to misunderstand this. And I didn't squash any of those feelings down anymore. I started to do it with love and integrity. And as I did it, my voice changed. And I noticed that people who are tight in the jaw, who have goiters, who have symptoms around the neck, they have squashed their expression coming from their gut. Hmm. And when you do that, the body will perform a symptom to let you know that. And chanting is the most releasing because it vibrates from the heart and helps your voice to be exposed.
Mm-hmm. Singing in chorus with others also helps.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the difference between the work that you're doing when you share your information with groups. I know you do workshops and seminars on the mainland, and
right.
And then you bring special groups over here to actually get involved with living on the land in the sacred bay. Is it different, let's say, from conducting a seminar or workshop on the mainland in that atmosphere and then bringing a group over here into this magic
absolutely,
land?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is the island of the root chakra.
Mm.
So this is the root chakra symbolism of learning how to stand up for yourself, learning how to feel safe. If you have any symptoms that tell you that, oh gosh, I can't take care of myself, I can't feel safe, a lot of family issues. This island will bring it up. It's the lava. Mm-hmm. It's the eruption mm-hmm. of Pele energy. So people feel that as they come in, they get thrashed in the water. Mm-hmm. So everything becomes a lesson, you know, when we come into the group, mm-hmm. and that's a whole group lesson. Now that's different from when I teach it at home, and we're not in the island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not there. But again, they get something different from that.
You are generating a group energy right. whenever you bring people together in your classes.
Right. This is by far one of the most powerful ways that you can make a transition in your life is to come here to this island and to incorporate the Huna teachings and the pod mind, and also learning how to do the Huna processes of forgiveness. And you know, you come back, you know, in a much different way in the way that you handle yourself on the mainland. Every time I came back from my experience with the dolphins, I would move through another fear that I had in my life. Or I would see what I had created around myself that was important, and I'd say, this isn't important anymore. And so it was like the unimportant things just got pushed aside to make room for that which was important to me at the moment.
That's an important point,
yeah.
because so often people come into a situation where they want to learn, but they're unwilling to let go of old patterns that would leave room for new patterns to exist.
Right. You have to be willing to say, I'm willing to let this go. And some people aren't. And many times I've done healings or asked to go. I had this one man who wanted me to come over. He was a quadriplegic. He had heard me on the radio, and he wanted an entity taken out of him. He didn't want to be healed from the wheelchair. He just wanted the entity to be removed. And I went over to his house. I rarely do that, but I did a clearing in his house first. And we started talking to the entity. And I would talk to it first in a kind of a very authoritative voice, but there was no response. And finally, I came in this gentler tone with the chanting. And it was like as though all of a sudden it changed its form inside. It took on the form of a tap dancer with a top hat and little tails and a cane. And it tap danced its way out of him into the ethers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was free, finally, of this entity.
Wow. Well, let me ask you, are you called upon to do clearings and healings like this? You say you don't do it very often, but you know, do people look to you for this type of work?
I do depossession work.
Huh. That sounds pretty like exorcist.
Yes, I know, but see, that's the old way that Hollywood looks at it.
Yeah.
People are possessed by thought forms.
Mm-hmm.
And when they've given a lot of power to fearful thought forms, it takes on a power, and it can come on and collect on your unconscious mind. It's not a part of the unconscious mind, but it collects onto it. And if someone has had a weakness in their body, like from drugs or alcohol, just intense weak times during their body, these things can come in and collect inside the body and suck energy from you. It's like an energy vampire.
Well, you think the unconscious mind is really the key to this healing process, don't you?
It is the key. It is the only communicator to the higher self. You cannot send a prayer through the conscious mind. There's no connection whatsoever between your conscious mind and the higher self. It's like there's no telephone line there at all. So you can read 10,000 books, go to 50 million seminars, and you're not going to feel this connection because it's not there. The conscious mind talks to your unconscious mind via having experiences of fear or happy or sad. And the unconscious mind is like a little computer. It takes it all in. It doesn't have, you know, an objection one way or another. It filters this in and holds these memories in like a little file box until you get the learnings from it. It's doing it for your protection.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a little 2-year-old child. It's like a little puppy dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wants to clear this stuff out so it can run your body more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Because do you tell your heart to beat?
Mm-hmm.
Do you tell your heart to beat?
Of course not.
No, it's the unconscious mind running your body.
Mm-hmm.
It knows more about you than you think you know. And so
there was one doctor, scientist, who had observed that the anatomic system, that part of our body, bodily functions, which takes place without our conscious awareness,
mm-hmm.
is the same type of system that the dolphins affect directly when we get in the water with them. It's something that does not happen on a conscious level.
Right.
And this is why science and scientists have had such a difficult time trying to categorize the nature of this new level of healing that you're involved in and so many others are involved in, using these new tools to access the unconscious mind, different than Sigmund Freud or even Carl Jung, although it's probably in the classic conditioning more similar to Carl Jung's theory of how we can access and start to apply healing to the unconscious.
When I do workshops, I bring these little puppets with me.
Yeah.
And I have Ernie, you know, from Sesame Street.
Sure.
He symbolizes the unconscious mind.
Okay.
And he has all the bags. I have him all dressed up with black bags because he's holding all your, you know, your unprocessed, all your baggage.
Yes.
And then Doc, who was one of the seven dwarfs, because I used to play Snow White at Disneyland years ago, I used him.
You would be good. you got that.
That was my first job.
Oh, wow.
Snow White at Disneyland back in the 60s.
How perfect.
Well, it's all symbolic.
It is, and all of our life, as we said earlier, is a rehearsal for what we are now.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I use Doc as the conscious mind, and they're kind of trying to be buddies, and then the higher self is just this big ball of light, you know, that we're trying to reach. You can only reach it via your little unconscious mind, because when it gets excited about seeing something different, then like when my back was completely was like destroyed. I had herniated discs. This was 10 years ago. I had scoliosis born as a child. I was in a brace. I had a very crooked spine, and it was compounded by lots of fear again, and then the driving that I did and just a lot of brutal stuff on my body, that finally I collapsed and was paralyzed completely on the left side of my body. And I had learned the HUNA, had learned how to talk to the unconscious. I thought, I'm going to talk to the unconscious and get it all excited about healing my back because I don't want surgery. And I was scheduled for surgery in a week if this didn't work. I didn't want to be cut. And so I went inside and I started to thank my back for remembering how to be flexible. And see, it operates on the presence of now. It can't process a negative, so it has to see what it is that it wants to form. So I thanked it for remembering how to be flexible. And then I started to get excited about climbing trees. And I saw myself literally climbing trees like I did as a kid, and climbing rooftops. I used to love climbing. And I got all excited about doing that. And so in that excitement, the unconscious mind changes the DNA to match that picture and sends it up to the higher self. The higher self has a way of changing the form and bringing you that blueprint of perfect health via the unconscious mind. But you have to get the feeling of that as though it's happening now. That's the key. When prayer doesn't work, people are praying for something. They're literally in fear because they haven't gotten it yet, and that doesn't impress the unconscious mind. So that was the key. And as soon as I did that for 2 days, and my back healed.
Amazing.
So like now, I have a sprained ankle that I got yesterday because I was too tired and all that stuff. And so now I just see myself dancing and hopping and skipping and jumping. And I've asked it within 24 hours for the swelling to go down, and it will.
Well, we were joking earlier about here you are a stunt driver, and yet you were accident prone. And
sometimes,
what's the difference between,
you
know, where you are in focus and when you let that slip out? And you're a master teacher, and yet you're as prone to human foibles as anyone else. We never graduate to the level of mastery. We still have our feet on the ground, and as much as we would like to think that we might be able to levitate, basically we're here to be human.
Right.
And we're not here to be anything other than what we are fully intended to be. But that is a lot more than what we're allowing ourselves and have.
If we allow ourselves to listen and to, you know, to listen to the body. And I knew that I needed to take a nap yesterday. I knew I needed, but I just pushed ahead. That's the fire in me. And so then that things happen to me because I don't listen sometimes.
Well, we both experienced the same thing yesterday morning. We went down to one of the sacred bays, and it wasn't on cue by any long stretch of the imagination. And we went in hopes that being there might afford the opportunity of swimming with the dolphins. They weren't there at the early hour, and so we were just reconciled ourselves to the fine. We were going to be swimming. It was a beautiful day. The ocean was gorgeous, crystal clear. And just probably at the point where we had surrendered the idea of even seeing the dolphins, they showed up.
Exactly.
And they showed up with such love, such closeness. It was, for me, with many, many years, and you with many, many years of having countless numbers of experiences swimming with dolphins, it was ranked up as one of the top
Absolutely.
Possible experiences, where they invited us inside of their energy bodies and to participate as a family, as part of a pod. And the healing was almost so overwhelmingly beautiful that I found myself, you know, falling asleep, nodding off in front of my workstation. So I said, I give up. I'm going over. I'm crashing out on the couch.
And I should have done that, but I knew I had so many things to do. It was such an activation. They were looking at us, and we were in the pod.
Yeah.
And I was belly to belly with one coming up, and I had not, because I was not a diver, and I started diving now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as I came up, this one came and matched my belly and mm-hmm. came up and then went over my head and then went around me again to the point where I was spinning mm-hmm. and looking at mm-hmm. this divine being. And they were big, big masters. I looked at them, the 12 tribe, like a tribe. Just like a tribe, no babies in this one. Just the big guys.
Well, it was a diverse pod. I did see some juniors,
no little
keikis.
Right.
But they were there, and they were so loving to the humans who were out there with their hearts open. I found that particular spot seems to be, in my experience, the most healing and loving of all of the places that we are afforded the opportunity to swim with
it's
them.
It's like a portal there.
They're all portals.
They're called the bat one. Is something, when it's there, it's serene.
And very, surreal. Very gentle and healing and loving. The master dolphins who come in are master healers, who are usually there to help and assist with the healing of some of the weaker components, like some of them I've noticed with severe cookie cutter bites.
Right.
And the people there seem to almost fall into a cadence of giving love. And it's a large prayer circle when you walk into and enter into that atmosphere. So it's really quite special. And equally special when you share it with people who acknowledge that, and it seems to enhance the experience. It is about love versus fear, after all.
And when I think back on the years when I was in a marriage, a very long marriage, and if I hadn't made the choice to leave that and to break out of my fears, I wouldn't be here now experiencing this. When you think of the roads that you take and how you can get swallowed up by what you think is security and lots of money, and a different path, but you're not happy inside. You know you're not following what Spirit is guiding you to do. And making that choice, I look back on that as I am here now and being with these dolphins, that I left all of that so-called security to follow my Spirit and to follow my heart.
Well, I can definitely identify with that, because I think sometimes what appears to be a not good personal decision, according to the American dream, or what it looked like when it was all plotted out on paper, and our rational mind says, now this has all the trappings of success. But when we're willing to accept that, maybe we have to choose another path or let go more readily of something that's holding us back from our spiritual awakening, I think that's the transitional point. When you surrender to all that is, and say that, okay, the decisions I've been making have not been the right ones for enlightenment for me, and then allow Spirit to come into your life. That's a big quantum leap for most people.
Well, it is. And I remember, in just getting some of the testimonials back from the people I've taken on these trips, the transitions they've made going back home. I've had one lady who, when she came to my workshop in Mountain View, she was all afraid, had these bottle glasses, couldn't see very clearly, and brought her daughter on the trip. And her daughter was like a little indigo child who only ate chocolate peanut butter when she was there. But she just thrived. And this woman went through such a transition with being with the dolphins. When she went back home, she decided she would only work 3 days a week, and with the days off, she wrote her first novel. and she started to do children's books and changed her eyes and got surgery. I mean, just amazing progression mm-hmm. in your life, you know, from clearing. We do the cord cutting in the sessions. We do, I do some higher self therapy with the group. And we do it, you know, at a group level. Of course, it's more, you know, powerful when you can do it on a one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
But still, people make drastic changes. And it's exciting. Yeah.
We touched upon the difference and yet the similarities. When you're in a group, you have mm-hmm. the other people around you.
Right.
And there starts to be an interaction, and a very human thing takes over, and there are mirrors in relationships with everybody else in the group, and that creates a healing atmosphere when everybody is there, at least trying to step into it. How would you say that is different from the one-on-one, the personal breakthrough sessions that you do with people, and the group sessions?
Well, in the one-on-one, I have people come to me with a script of what they say to themselves.
Mm.
So I have them write down what is this internal dialogue that is really running their body mm-hmm. at a cellular level versus what they're, you know, talking about in their head. They don't want to access that, but that literally is what is changing the chemicals inside the body and creating the healing, you know, work to break down within them.
Mm-hmm.
So they come with that script, and then I find from that what is the thread or the number one wound that they're carrying with them. Because that's the part. It's like if you imagine chains on a chain link fence. We want to get to the very first link. And when we go back to that first link and we bring down that all the resources to scoop up that little part inside of them and to provide safety and give this little part the tools it needs to grow and feel safe now, mm-hmm. it's going to let go of everything on the chain.
Hmm.
So I take through the timeline, through past life regression, through asking the higher self and the guides to take you back to that one little part inside that broke away from the light, that created unworthiness in the body,
mm-hmm.
that said, I'm not worthy to receive this love. I'm mm-hmm. not worthy to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest wounds I think our society has. They
mm-hmm.
don't feel deserving.
Mm.
They don't feel worthy. And if you don't feel worthy, it's like you've closed a door inside. So when the universe, which wants to give you something, the door is closed there. So it can't go there, so it'll move to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then people say, oh, I don't deserve money, and oh, look at me, poor, poor, poor me. But it's because the internal dialogue reflects that. So
mm-hmm.
it's blocking all of those gifts to come to you. My job is to go inside and help you to open that so that you do feel worthy to receive. And we do that in the first part of the hour. And then I take people through the forgiveness with, you know, that it goes deeper on a one-on-one session
yeah.
with stuff. I mean, some people
will
spend
3 or 4 hours
yes,
with somebody, right?
Right. But at the unconscious level, there's no time.
Uh-huh.
So it seems what is on paper for 3 or 4 hours could seem like 5 or 10 minutes
mm-hmm,
at
mm-hmm.
the unconscious level. And so we do.
You're the tour guide.
Session. Yeah, I am a tour guide.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a tour guide at Disneyland, but they made me Snow White. I've always wanted to be a tour guide, so now I get to be a tour guide for the emotions.
Well, you've obviously fashioned a life that gives you the greatest amount of joy. You've been able to help people by inviting them into your world, a world that you understand and you feel affinities for. And these gifts that of second sight, as it's called, have risen within you. Maybe something that was always there, but as you've exercised your powers, and you've had some great success stories. The lady with the bottle cap or the bottle glasses,
yeah.
finding her joy and finding her creative spirit. What about the people who come to your classes? They take all the sessions and they're still stuck. What do you say to those people?
Well, again, they can come for an individual session because some people have only just come for the workshops and then they need to go deeper. I have them change something of their lifestyle. Some people are not willing to give up marijuana, not willing to give up maybe some of their drugs or whatever, and that really does create a blockage to go into the unconscious.
So it's some personal habit, let's say, that
right.
they might have that blocks them from moving into their greater
right.
person.
Yeah, if you do the clearing of that, it's with more ease that you can go into the unconscious.
Hmm.
Because the conscious mind, again, the ego is fed by drugs, alcohol, caffeine, you know, and sugar.
Hmm.
It loves it. And as soon as you starve the ego from receiving that, it'll quiet the conscious mind.
Mm.
And then the conscious mind won't be so at you with self-talk, and allow you to be quieter so you can go in and do the healing at the unconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost necessary to do a clearing. I won't take people unless they're willing to do something on their own to clear that.
Well, I've heard psychotherapists talk in those terms when they say unless the person that is asking for treatment is ready to make the change and consciously says, yeah, I'm ready to make the change, this is nothing that we can do as a therapist.
There's secondary gain that I did some hospice work for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Danny and Brinkley. Are you familiar with
Danny? Yes.
He's a really good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
I just love Danny. And when I first went to see him, he was talking about hospice and have a wonderful experience that would be. And so I started doing hospice in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with this one woman who had multiple sclerosis, and she was in the very final stages of her life. She was only in her 40s. And I grew very fond of her, would bring her extra food and take her outside. And I never, you know, in hospice, you're just with them. You're just there to hear them. You're not there to heal anybody. And she started asking me about my healing work. And so we got to be kind of close, and I started talking to her about it. And I said, you know, there's symbols, and we do energy and stuff. And she says, well, show me. And so I started to just, her legs hadn't worked in years, like about 11 years. And I started to run the symbols over her legs and, you know, do some work on it. And all of a sudden, her leg started moving. And I looked at her, and she had this, like, shock on her face that turned quickly into fear. And I just stopped right away. Because in that moment, she realized, oh, my God, I could heal if I want to, and I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And she died that next month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was just there. There was I got to see the, you know, when people don't want to make a change, they won't.
Right. Or it's not their life path.
It's not their life path.
Right.
And it's not up to you to force that onto anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You have to step back, and you have to only offer it when you're asked.
Mm. That's so important. And just as an acknowledgement, as we've been talking here outside, we'll get a little bit of rain.
Isn't this a blessing?
And in the Hawaiian tradition, rain is a blessing.
The kau hele moa.
Yes, okay, it's wonderful. And, you know, as you were talking and the rain is going, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the energy radiating from you during this conversation is what I would have to call a healing energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you went into the modality of feeling the healer rise within you, and the performer, Belinda, stepped just slightly to the side to allow this beautiful part of you to express itself so wonderfully. Thank you. I mean, I was feeling it and radiating from you, and you do have that. You do have that belief that you're trying to share with people that this is something that everybody has a capability of having.
We all have the ability to be light. We are all powerful beings. And if you accept that within yourself, you can activate that within you. And I believe that coming here to the islands and being with the dolphins is more of an activation that gets you into that. And whatever you can do, I mean, whatever you can, it's not a doing, you're a being. And I like to say, instead of how you being, instead of how you doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because really we get the wrong, you know, message given to us.
That's true.
We don't have to do anything.
We're a society of doers.
Yeah, and in the Huna way, you're not even injured. There's nothing wrong with you. There's a veil that is covering your light. So if you just imagine this light and this just cover, this blanket, and it's just through the lifetime we're just moving these blankets away, you know, by cutting cords or doing this activation, whatever it is, to move fear out of the body. And then the light is there. I mean, you'll hear from people who've had near-death experiences where they go into this light. That's them. But they had to die to do it. Damien was one of them.
Well, of course, a couple of times.
Yeah, and then he said, if there had been a hell, I should have been there because I killed people.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there was no hell. I went through a life review. And I had to feel what I had done to everybody I had done something to, and that didn't feel good. That's the equivalent of hell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then when he came back again and started doing better things, he didn't have to go through that so much.
Right, right.
So you don't get to escape anything. Everything you do, think, say, or, you know, feel is recorded somewhere.
Mm-hmm. The so-called Akashic Record.
The Akashic Record.
And you have to be responsible for your chapters and
yeah.
verse.
So why wait till you die to be in that light? Why not activate it while
mm-hmm.
you're alive?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what enlightenment is to be lighter.
Mm-hmm.
When my back healed completely after those 2 days, and I started to walk again, and then I went and had an x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
I had been told once by a chiropractor that I looked in my 20s, but I had the body of an 80-year-old.
Mm. Well, that's kind of scary.
You
want to hear it the other way around, right?
Exactly. And now I had this new x-ray taken, and the chiropractor said, I've never seen an aligned spine before. And I said, excuse me? He said, yeah, your back is perfectly aligned. I had never, ever been told that.
Wow.
So it not only healed, you know, the injury, but it cured the scoliosis as well.
And we talk about energy healing, and in the Asian philosophies, the energy points go up and down the spine. And when they're in alignment with one another, then harmony, true harmony and power can exist. So in a manner of speaking, the actual physicality of alignment of the spine is a symbol of the energy centers that all were coming into harmony and alignment within you.
Right.
Well, what better work to be doing? Do you envision that this new world that is developing right now, this new horizon of enlightened beings, do you see it as, you were talking about the Hopi prophecy earlier, the vision between two kinds of worlds that would probably maybe even be superimposed. Do you feel that enlightenment is something, what would the world be like if for the majority of people, or is it something that the majority of people can actually participate in?
You know, it's almost like when we transcend within our own minds and in our own beingness, we will move to another place where we will not be batting up against others that are still at war. That is going to still go on here, and we're going to move to another place. So I almost see it as though, you know, our energies are going to create a different reality for ourselves. And whether or not these people join us is going to be, you know, a choice. I mean, everything in the universe is brought about by free choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see, you know, a big transition within the next, you know, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of earth changes
mm-hmm.
will take place. And it won't, not to be in fear of it, because remember, we never die.
Mm-hmm.
And so the spirit has just come here to help, you know, move us through, just like the dolphins are here in a different
mm-hmm.
form, in an ET form, to help the humans to reach that place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just our minds that are saying, when's this going to happen and how is this going to take place? And it just is.
Mm-hmm.
We have to just relax into knowing that it's all perfect and trust the process.
Mm. Well, relaxing is a big word.
Yeah.
And
surrendering is
surrendering
more.
And relaxing, yeah, those could be used
interchangeably.
I don't envision personally, you know, new communities of white-robed people running around, hovering off the ground.
No.
And I've gone into myself enough to realize that part of the interesting facet of living is, you know, the texture itself. And then if everything was of one color, or if everything was of the
yeah.
light, or like a photograph, how you know, boring it would get.
Exactly.
So part of our own personal dramas, if we are in control of our life, is to make our lives interesting, or to bring up challenges that are fulfilling, rather than feel as if the challenges have been foisted upon us by a cruel world. So the work that we're doing, both of us, in our own ways, is helping people step into, first, the choice that their life can be different if they don't like it, and it starts with them deciding that they want something different than what they feel they have. That's the first step
exactly.
in our healing, I think.
And you become a role model. That's it. They watch you change.
Mm-hmm.
And so that reflection, everything is magnetized from within the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you change that fear, you start to activate and bring people of like-mindedness into your space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what brings the change.
That's the dimensional shift right there.
That's right.
You can have somebody who are warmongers over here
right.
in the next apartment complex, and then people sharing space in a room that is of a much higher vibrational frequency.
Right.
Yes, they coexist. The question then becomes, well, who's calling the shots on the global thing? My answer to that is that the world has its own agenda, separate from the human drama that goes on top of it.
Right, and there it is drama. And
that's
really. And you watch the people who take part in the drama and those that choose to shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a television set.
Precisely. What is one of the commercials run on TNT? It's all about drama, and drama is conflict.
And boy,
isn't that fun to watch and be a participant in?
Yeah.
Okay, what are they telling us here?
Exactly.
They want to keep us in a state of chaos so that we'll keep paying our taxes and we'll keep having a 9-to-5 job and we'll keep being miserable, so we'll buy more products and pretend that we're going to feel better if we own a new this or a new that.
And I love it, like in Pila's book, he says, you know that you're in the aloha spirit when you all of a sudden drop your insurance.
I can attest to that,
yeah,
folks.
And then me too. And you turn off the 6 o'clock news and
yeah.
you decide that you don't want to participate in conflict.
Yeah.
And you start kissing strangers as your neighbor buys a gun.
Sharing in love rather than participating in fear.
Exactly.
And that's what it boils down to. And if we can all just sort of step towards that in whatever pace is comfortable for us, we as Dolphinville people invite anybody in the world to join us.
Yeah.
And we don't have anything that you don't already have.
Right.
All we have is an opportunity to experience one of the unique places on our planet, of the Garden of Eden, paradise that's here. Temperature varies maybe 5 degrees between winter and summer. The ocean is usually very receiving, with some exception that you have to be careful when you transcend and go over the threshold between the land and the sea. And even when you're out floating free in this blissful sea of possibilities, just to be mindful of how to relax and how to be surrendered to it all. That's a great environment for all of us. And I know that you plan to come back every year. You've already got the 2005 schedule plan.
Right, in June. I'm doing one in June and then one at the end of August
mm-hmm.
and September.
So now, how do people find you on the Internet? What's your website?
It's www.hunahealing.com.
Okay. And I was doing a quick search on Google, and you've appeared on a lot of radio shows.
Right.
You get yourself out there, which is really great. Because you're such a great spokesperson for the teachings and this new turn of the way that we can all be.
Well, everyone is playing the same musical chords, and so we all tune into one another. And it's about networking and sharing information, and
mm-hmm.
that's what I found, that I needed to teach this because I didn't want to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never lose what you teach.
Mm.
And then you must start living it. And that's what I do. I live this so that I can never let it go.
Hmm. One of the phenomena I've also recognized when I assist people on some whatever level to co-facilitate or help people just into the ocean, there's always an initiation that's going on. Not only the initiation of the person in your care, but you yourself are being reinitiated. So that's part of the joy of teaching, I think.
Yeah. And I was a teacher. I taught third grade.
Yeah, I can see that.
I did. That was my only really job, my real job.
Mm-hmm.
But now this is a teaching of a higher intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a life teaching, because they don't teach this in school, which they, again, to teach someone how to breathe, to teach children how to cut cords, to empower them, to allow them to magnify their gifts, whatever that is,
mm-hmm.
and to fulfill. In Bali, I lived in Bali for a short time, and I noticed how they always empower the children. Whatever their gift is, they say, embellish on it. If
mm-hmm.
you're a painter, paint. If you're a carver, carve. If you're a dancer, dance. So they grow up knowing what their God-given gift is, mm-hmm. and that's what makes their spirit glow. Even though they work as a waitress mm-hmm. or they work in the rice field, mm-hmm. they know who they are. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened to this world, is that people have become stagnated as to their creative gifts.
Yeah.
And by doing this work, by unveiling all of that fear, the gifts start to come out, and then they start being fulfilled. The lawyer then starts teaching Huna, or the doctor becomes an herbalist, or, mm-hmm. you know, they start really to feel what it is that they were brought on this planet to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the fulfillment of whatever his spirit is guiding you. And you feel fulfilled, and your money comes in as a result of you doing what you love.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're aiming for. And I'm so happy that you're able to share that kind of wisdom with people and participatory research and how it is to be living in a state of bliss in Huna as a way of thinking that isn't complex. You don't have to learn a foreign language here, although you have to become familiar with how it feels to chant from the heart and to enunciate words of a different language. But really the words are almost, I would say, spirit language embodied with the vowel sounds. Everything just rolls out.
Well, even just the ha, just mm-hmm. doing a ha, just mm-hmm. an ah sound. The ah sound is the sound of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when you just ah, that's the sound of God. Amen, mm-hmm. Jehovah. Shalom, Hawaii, Aloha, Ah is within all those words.
Mm-hmm. And who, or you,
okay.
You is another very powerful symbol. In fact, all the vowel sounds activate, though they're not the energy systems of the body.
Exactly, and especially laughing. Mm-hmm. And the ha breath. And when you breathe four times, it's like an opening that asks your higher self to come in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Belinda, it's been so much fun.
Thank you.
Sharing you and sharing your wisdom and your enthusiasm and your great, great power and strength with the radio audience. So I would encourage anybody who resonates with this information, check it out, hunahealing.com. It's something that will maybe open up some really wonderful avenues for you. You live in Northern California. You do conduct these seminars all year round. You are available for personal sessions with people. And you don't need to be there in person. All you need to do is a call on the telephone. And you can make space, beyond space and time, to help people to realize their dreams. So thank you so much for being a guest today.
Oh, it was my honor. Thank you.
And perhaps you will bless us with one more chant as we let this program come to a close. So thank you again, Belinda Farrell. Huna, here we are.
Hai noho anna ke kuya kanahi hele hele hiya le hiya hiya he te ti ohu ohu e ta ua koko Ahana hina malui kalani malue hoi. He oho ulu mahi ana ho kanehi ko na kahu ho wano wahi.
Okay, that concludes another show of Dolphinville Radio. I want to thank my guest, Belinda Farrell, for sharing her wonderful talent, gift for bringing sound vibrations to these broadband widths. So, thank you for joining us once again. And just a reminder, this is brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider for a wide range of services, including virtual tour realities, as well as this broadband for broadcast into the Ethernet. Thank you for joining us today, and I will look forward to catching you next time. This is Dolphin Us saying be well, swim free. See you next time.